Russian authorities say they've positively identified the body of Wagner Group leader Yevgeny Prigozhin.
Russian Investigative Committee spokesperson Svetlana Petrenko said through molecular genetic examinations, all 10 reported dead in the crash matched the listed flight sheet.
Plus, the Electoral Commission declares a winner in Zimbabwe's election.
But Mnangagwa won re-election, beating challenger Nelson Chamisa of the Citizens Coalition for Change Party.
And later in the program, a look at what scientists believe may have contributed to the death of thousands of emperor penguins. Today is Monday, August 28th. From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. Good morning. I'm Steve Miller. Russia says the remains of Yevgeny Prigozhin, the leader of the Wagner mercenary group, were confirmed among the dead from a fatal plane crash last week in Russia. The country's investigative committee said genetic testing verified his identity. The crash of the private jet came 2 months after Prigozhin led a failed uprising against the Kremlin. We start off with VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
Russian authorities confirmed that an August 23rd fatal plane crash killed Wagner Group leader Yevgeny Prigozhin. He was listed as one of 7 passengers and 3 crew members aboard the doomed flight, all of whom were reported dead by Russian state media. Investigators said Sunday that they identified Prigozhin's remains in the crash. Russian Investigative Committee spokesperson Svetlana Petrenko said through molecular genetic examinations, all 10 reported dead in the crash matched the listed flight sheet. The fatal crash came 2 months to the day after Prigozhin led a failed mutiny during which his mercenaries drove to within 200 kilometers of the capital, Moscow. Prigozhin's Wagner mercenaries had been fighting alongside Russian troops in the country's war in Ukraine. At the time, Russian President Vladimir Putin had this to say of the boldest threat to his reign since he took power nearly a quarter century ago.
What we are facing now is treason, unreasonable ambitions and personal interests led to treachery, state treason, and betrayal of our own people and common cause, which Wagner fighters and commanders fought and died for alongside our units and brigades.
What caused the flight carrying Prigozhin to fall from the sky remains a mystery, but the Pentagon recently shot down one theory explaining the crash. Pentagon spokesperson Brigadier General Pat Ryder speaking on U.S. Network Pool as provided by Reuters.
We don't have any information to indicate right now. The press reporting stating that there was some type of surface-to-air missile that took down the plane. We assess that information to be inaccurate.
And while Putin has yet to publicly take credit for involvement in Prigozhin's death, U.S. President Joe Biden says it's unlikely to have happened without Putin's blessing or knowledge. Officially, the Kremlin denies having anything to do with downing the plane, as it now continues waging war on Ukraine without one of its key cornerstones in the form of the Wagner Group led by Prigozhin. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
In the 2024 presidential race, former President Donald Trump's electability is again being questioned after he surrendered to authorities in Georgia in an election fraud case last week. National polls still show Trump is leading his fellow Republican Party presidential hopefuls by a large margin. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias is up next.
Days after the Atlanta jail booking of former President Donald Trump made headlines around the world, his political ambitions are again under scrutiny. Trump currently faces 91 criminal charges across 4 indictments. Among his contenders for the Republican presidential nomination, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who was interviewed on ABC's This Week show, suggested that Trump is a liability for his party.
The majority of my competitors believe that you can have a convicted felon as our nominee for president, and that they'd support that and that he could win. I think that's an impossibility.
Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, who alongside Christie participated last week in their party's first debate, acknowledged Trump's achievements when interviewed on NBC's Meet the Press.
I want to build on the foundation that Trump laid. Frankly, I will invite him as an advisor and a mentor. I don't want to relearn the same lessons. I want to pick up where he left off.
Trump's legal problems won't be a part of President Joe Biden's 2024 re-election campaign strategy. The Biden campaign's co-chair, Cedric Richmond, told ABC.
What I will say about President Biden and Vice President Harris is that they have always focused on the American people. So they're going to continue to do their jobs of bringing down costs, raising wages, rebuilding the middle class.
But as President Biden's age continues worrying Democratic voters, independent Senator Bernie Sanders, who appeared on NBC, suggested turning the focus to what's at stake in the policy arena.
Do you believe that women have a right to control their own bodies? Well, the president has been strong on that. Do you think that climate change is real? Or do you agree with the Republicans that it's a non-issue?
Meanwhile, Trump, who has denied all wrongdoing, is betting on using his criminal probes to advance his 2024 presidential bid. That includes promoting his mugshot, which is being printed on all kinds of merchandise for fundraising purposes. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
A masked man, carrying at least one weapon bearing a swastika, fatally shot three black people in Florida on Saturday. From the Associated Press, Julie Walker has that story.
Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters says the gunman, wearing a tactical vest, carrying an AR-style rifle and handgun, shot and killed two men and one woman, both black, at a Dollar General store.
This shooting was racially motivated, and he hated black people.
Waters says the 20-something-year-old shooter who killed himself left manifestos behind.
Portions of these manifestos detailed the shooter's disgusting ideology of hate.
He says the shooter texted his father telling him to check his computer when police found out it was too late. And Mayor Donna Deegan says the manifesto also points to the anniversary of a shooting at a video game tournament in Jacksonville. I'm Julie Walker.
U.S. President Joe Biden released a statement Sunday saying that as answers were being searched for, he and the First Lady were, quote, praying for the victims and their families, and we grieve with the people of Jacksonville, end quote. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has declared President Emmerson Mnangagwa the winner of Wednesday's general election. Columbus Mavhunga has the story from Harare, where the main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, is disputing their results.
Those are members of the ruling ZANU-PF party early Sunday saying President Emmerson Mnangagwa is as sweet as honey. The praise follows the announcement by Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Chairwoman Priscilla Makanyara Chigumba that Mnangagwa won re-election, beating challenger Nelson Chamisa of the Citizens Coalition for Change party by about 380,000 votes.
Now, therefore, I, Priscilla Makanyara Chigumba, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, do hereby declare that Mnangagwa Emmerson Dambudzo of ZANU-PF Party is declared duly elected President of the Republic of Zimbabwe with effect from 26 August 2023.
Those are ZANU-PF officials applauding Mnangagwa's re-election. On Sunday at the State House, Mnangagwa appealed to Zimbabweans for peace as he starts his final term. He also addressed his 10 presidential competitors.
I'm happy that I've won the race. I think those who feel the race was not run properly should know where to go to complain. I'm so happy that the race was run peacefully, transparently, and fairly, broad daylight. And I'm happy that there was huge turnout by our people. I'm sure that very few people in this country will say that the elections were marred by any violence, because there was no violence at all.
Not everyone agrees with him. Chamisa of the Citizens Coalition for Change party Sunday told reporters that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission had rigged the polls for Mnangagwa. VOA asked him what he plans to do.
The next step is that we are ready to form the next government on account of correcting all the errors that we have identified. We have the results and we are going to form that government. That is the next step. We are on a peace offensive, we are on a diplomatic offensive, and we are going to take an offensive stance in a progressive and democratic manner to make sure that the voice of the people is respected.
Even election observers such as the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition are condemning the way the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission conducted the polls, accusing it of withholding ballots in urban areas like Bulawayo and Harare, where the opposition has strong support. Obed Masarauri is the spokesperson on the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition.
Once again, the illegitimate crisis of those in power remains with us. The consequences are, one, we are going to have a serious challenge of internal tensions where those in power are going to try to force citizens to work under them when obviously citizens don't recognize them as the leadership. So a lot of force is going to be used. Secondly, this is a big dent on SADC and Africa, in as much as World Incredible Elections is concerned. This is a bad precedent for Africa, something that should never be accepted.
He was referring to SADC, the Southern African Development Community. Zimbabwe's previous elections have been disputed, but the results were never reversed. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News.
We're also looking at these other stories from around the world. Protests against soaring power prices continued in Pakistan for a third consecutive day, with television footage showing enraged consumers at rallies burning their electricity bills. The power supply department in northwestern Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province requested police provide security for its staff and installations after threats of attacks by protesters. Thousands of people demonstrated Sunday in Niger in support of last month's coup, a few hours before the deadline given to France's ambassador in an ultimatum to leave the country. Demonstrators gathered near the French military base in the capital of Niamey, some waving Nigerian or Russian flags, others with placards calling for the departure of French troops. The U.S. military in Africa reported a collective self-defense airstrike against al-Shabaab militants, killing 13 fighters in Somalia. The airstrike took place approximately 45 kilometers northwest of Kismayo. This is VOA News. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The number of tourists visiting China is a fraction of the level before the coronavirus pandemic, despite the country having fully opened to foreign visitors back in March. Henry Ridgewell reports from London on why vacationers are reluctant to return.
In a recent broadcast, Chinese state television said the country was witnessing a domestic tourism boom. But there are few foreigners among the Chinese vacationers. In Shanghai, official figures show foreign visitor numbers are just a quarter of their pre-pandemic level in 2019. China's zero COVID policy closed the country to foreign tourists until March this year.
And the people are thinking, how about the pandemic during that time and very strict lockdown? Would I be locked down? And of course not. But people are worried about that sometimes because the political reason and the government field not very friendly among China and the West relation, and that has certainly impacted the customer's decision to go or not.
But Wu insists foreign tourists will get a warm welcome in China.
Before pandemic, you know, there are plenty of tourists, plenty of foreign visitors. Either you are just one among hundreds of thousands, is nothing. But now, because there's so few, so they are asked to take a photo wherever they go and treated like a celebrity and like 30 years ago. And it is incredible.
China was a major destination for Japanese tourists and business travelers before the pandemic. But demand from the island nation has also failed to return, says Yoko Hayano of JTB Tourism Research and Consulting. She said since the coronavirus pandemic, all air routes have not yet been restored. The number of airline seats available to China is still only about 30% compared with 2019, so there is a big impact.
Since the coronavirus pandemic, all air routes have not yet been restored. The number of airline seats available to China is still only about 30% compared with 2019, so there's a big impact.
Meanwhile, Japan is experiencing a boom in foreign tourism. Hayano said the number of tourists visiting Japan from China is increasing rapidly. So in that sense, there are fewer airline seats that Japanese people can use.
The number of tourists visiting Japan from China is increasing rapidly. So in that sense, there are fewer airline seats that Japanese people can use.
China is trying to revive inbound tourism. Beijing and Washington have agreed to double the number of direct passenger flights to 24 per week from late October. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
Three U.S. Marines were killed when their aircraft crashed during a training mission in northern Australia. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has that story.
Our thoughts are with them and their families.
The Chief Minister of Australia's Northern Territory, Natasha Files, says the Osprey tilt rotor aircraft with 23 U.S. service personnel on board crashed on Melville Island during a training exercise. Helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft rushed to the remote location to tend to the dead and injured.
The Northern Territory government stands by to offer whatever assistance is required.
The crash resulted in a significant fire, according to local media. The Pentagon says the Marines were participating in what's called Exercise Predators Run, training with troops from Australia, Indonesia, the Philippines, and East Timor, a coalition that could respond to military moves by China. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Soccer's ruling world body FIFA said on Saturday that it had suspended Spanish Federation Chief Luis Rubiales from all football-related activities for 3 months, as it investigates an incident in which he kissed player Jenny Hermoso. Reuters' Edward Barron has more.
Soccer's ruling world body FIFA said on Saturday it had suspended Spanish Federation Chief Luis Rubiales from all football-related activities for 3 months. That's while it investigates an incident in which he kissed player Jenny Hermoso on the lips after Spain's Women's World Cup victory. The suspension from national and international activities takes effect immediately from Saturday. Just 24 hours earlier, Rubiales had been defiant over the kiss, arguing it was consensual, and repeatedly saying that he would not resign.
No voy a dimitir.
Adding that what he called false feminists were, quote, trying to kill me. The kiss has been condemned as unwanted by Hermoso, her teammates, and the Spanish government. Earlier on Saturday, the federation he heads said it would stick by him. However, after FIFA's decision was announced, a spokesperson for the Royal Spanish Football Federation said it respected all FIFA's pronouncements. In a statement hours before the FIFA move, the federation had said it would show there have been lies told about what happened by Hermoso or people speaking for her. Hermoso said she did not consent to the kiss and felt, quote, vulnerable and the victim of an aggression. The Spanish government cannot fire Rubiales, but has strongly denounced his actions and said on Friday it was seeking to get him suspended. The Spain women's team has also mutinied, saying they would not play internationals while Rubiales remains head of the federation.
Edward Barron reports for Reuters News. And an emergency meeting of the Soccer Federation's regional heads will discuss the crisis on Monday, when women's groups will rally in downtown Madrid in support of forward Jenny Hermoso. According to a new study, thousands of baby emperor penguins drowned last year in Antarctica after sea ice broke up early. The British Antarctic Survey is blaming climate change and says satellite images suggest as many as 10,000 baby penguins may have died. Phil Mercer brings us that story.
Emperor penguins are the largest of the 18 species of penguin and one of the largest of all birds. British scientists have reported an alarming die-off of chicks after reviewing data from the European Union's Sentinel-2 satellites. The research shows four of five emperor penguin colonies in the Bellingshausen Sea near the Antarctic Peninsula suffered a catastrophic breeding failure at the end of last year. It's the first time such a widespread regional breeding collapse has been recorded in emperor penguins. Warming seas prematurely melted the ocean ice, killing baby penguins before they were mature enough to survive. Scientists say when the ice breaks up too soon because of global warming, the chicks fall into the water and drown or freeze. The study by the British Antarctic Survey, the National Polar Research Institute, was published Friday in the journal Communications Earth and Environment. Mary Ann Lee, a professor at the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies at the University of Tasmania, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation breeding collapses this year could be even worse than those documented last year.
The changes in Antarctica are happening far faster than any of us would have predicted. We can only hope that this is some kind of aberration in this region, but the extent of winter sea ice this year would indicate that similar events may occur for emperor penguins and other species this coming summer.
Wild emperor penguins are only found in Antarctica. They breed and raise their chicks mostly on floating sections of ice, which is connected to land or to other ice shelves. Researchers believe that emperor penguins could be mostly extinct by the end of the century because of warmer seas caused by climate change. They're currently listed as near threatened by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, which documents the most endangered species. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This has been International Edition of The Voice of America. Until next time, for Rick Pantaleo, I'm Steve Miller.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Many human rights violations committed by the North Korean regime of Kim Jong-un stem directly from or support the increasing militarization of the DPRK, declared High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk at a special meeting of the Security Council on Human Rights in North Korea.
For example, the widespread use of forced labor, including political prison camps, forced use of school children to collect harvest, the requirement for families to undertake labor and provide a quota of goods to the government, and confiscation of wages from overseas workers all support the military apparatus of the state and its ability to build weapons.
This was confirmed by the Security Council testimony of North Korean defector Il-yeo Kim. The North Korean government has no policy to help us. The government turns our blood and sweat into a luxurious lifestyle for the leadership and missiles that blast our hard work into the sky, he said. We used to think that the money spent on just one missile could feed us for 3 months, but the government doesn't care and is only concerned with maintaining their power, developing nuclear weapons, and creating propaganda to justify their actions. We cannot have peace without human rights, declared U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
Kim Jong-un's repressive totalitarian control of society and the systemic widespread denial of human rights and fundamental freedoms ensures the regime can expend inordinate public resources developing its unlawful WMD and ballistic missile programs without public objection. This war machine, which stands in violation of multiple Security Council resolutions, is powered by repression and cruelty.
It is clear the North Korean regime neglects the well-being of its people, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
Its food distribution policies favors the military and lead to chronic malnourishment among its citizens. Pyongyang also relies on forced labor and the exploitation of workers domestically and overseas to power its unlawful weapons program.
The modern world has no place for the North Korean government's brutality, declared Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. And the international community and this council must continue to speak out against this injustice and its destabilizing impact on regional and international peace and security. The United States will continue to promote human rights and fundamental freedoms at home and around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.